Where is the wise man? Where is the scholar? Where is the philosopher of this age?
All right, welcome on back to another edition of the Baltimore Beatdown Podcast. It is Thursday night, November 17th. My name is Jake Luke. I'm joined on my screen by Spencer Nathaniel Schultz and friend of the show, BillyM_91. Is what he goes by on Twitter. Didn't ask his last name. Probably should have done a little bit of background.
Billy Mayfield.
Billy Mayfield. He's the co-host of Billy Marshall. War. Yep, on Blue Wire Pods. How's it going, pal?
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Definitely super excited to have you, man. We've been following each other for a while. You're huge into the NFL draft scene, huge into the NFL in general, college ball, everything. I know that you're a true ball lover. Pause by what we've been doing here so far the last couple of years, and always getting into that good discourse on the old Twitter, on the old Bird app, which we'll see if that survives the night or the week or whatever the heck's happening there. Hopefully something Elon paid $44 billion for doesn't crash in 10 days. That would be quite tragic. But anyway, man, wanted to ask you, what's your love affair with football? What's your football origin story? What got you into loving the Panthers? All that good stuff, brother.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've grown up watching football my life. I mean, you know, it was around 1995 when the Panthers, you know, originally were founded. I was living in North Carolina at the time, not in Charlotte, near Raleigh. And so from there, they just became such a household name. You know, I was like 6 years old and, or excuse me, 5 years old when they started playing. And, you know, from there, it just became, you know, the local team to watch. My dad was, you know, a Miami Dolphins fan growing up, but he kind of switched over to the Panthers because
there are so many dads, I feel like, that love Dan Marino and the Dolphins that just from wherever, maybe they're from there or not.
Yeah.
Dolphins have a lot of like the baby boomer dads.
That's what, when the Ravens weren't here, that's what Voss did. I think he was a Marino era Dolphins fan.
I mean, it's not a bad team to be a fan of, especially Marino. He was really fun. But yeah, you know, from there, I just like, you know, watched as much football as I could. Like, you know, growing up, you know, NFL primetime on Sunday evenings was like my go-to thing. And then, you know, spending those 1 p.m., you know, to 8 p.m. days and then transitioning that into college. You know, at the time, you know, there was a lot of discourse in high school and college about football, whatever it was, college or NFL. And yeah, man, I just, you know, obviously you found me on Twitter. I was on message boards before Twitter, and you know, we'll see what happens with the app itself. But I mean, Twitter's been a great place just to network and meet other NFL fans, Panther fans. So yeah, that's sort of just kind of how I got my break. I just started posting a lot of, you know, analysis on the NFL draft because it was like in 2011. Carolina obviously had the number one pick and they selected Cam Newton. I just watched that class really closely and it was a legendary class. And then, yeah, I met a lot of the people, you know, just followed like a lot of the NFL draft guys like Dane Brugler and Daniel Jeremiah, Fran Duffy, on and on and on. And then, yeah, then draft Twitter just became a thing and everyone had their other fan base Twitters and whatever. And yeah, I got kind of, you know, I started writing for Cat Scratch Reader, which is an SB Nation blog, as you guys are aware of. And yeah, so that's kind of like how my journey and hosting a podcast now with my good friend John Ellis. He hosts a radio show down in South Carolina. And yeah, that's been kind of like my primary source, not just because I'm busy with work, so I don't have time to write as much anymore. But I mean, I'll tell you this, man, it's really great just talking football and, you know, digesting the news. And it goes by quickly too. I mean, it feels like week one was yesterday, but we're already at week 11. So yeah, it's a good time though.
It definitely is. And it's funny, like all the stuff you're kind of hitting on there. I actually lived in South Carolina a little bit in the early 2000s. So that was kind of like the Derek Anderson, Steve Smith, Masin Muhammad team. So I was definitely more of a Ravens fan at the time, but I've always had a soft spot for the Panthers.
You stole my thunder, because one of my questions is going to be, who's the most underrated Carolina Panther of all time and why is it Masin Muhammad?
Yeah, there you go. Go with it.
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously been, you know, great. And I mean, I'm sure you, Spencer, you watch college football. You can see his son now.
Yeah.
He's been pretty amazing to watch. But no, he was certainly one of my fan favorites growing up. Not just him, Dan Morgan as well, the inside linebacker. And he's actually in their front office now. And so, those teams, especially the 2003 team, because a couple years before that, they went 1-15. And they didn't get the number one pick because Houston was an expansion team, but it all worked out because Houston took David Carr, and then Carolina was fortunate enough to grab Julius Peppers, a guy who's going to also be in the Hall of Fame. And in my opinion, the best player in franchise history, just a freak athlete. I mean, he was just one of my favorite players to watch. Muhammad, he's definitely up there. He was a tremendous player. I mean, just so many exciting moments watching him.
People do forget a little bit about Thomas Davis. I think he's got to be in that conversation. I think he was a little bit the Robin to Kuechly's Batman there for a little bit.
Oh, no, for sure. I mean, if we were going to go top five, I would certainly put Thomas Davis and Kuechly. I would probably say my top five would go Peppers, Cam Newton, Luke Kuechly, Thomas Davis, and Steve Smith.
That's a pretty sick top five to have, and especially all from like the 2000s and that being in the franchise. That's a pretty sick top five. That'd be great in like a updated like NFL Blitz kind of situation.
Oh, for sure. And the funny thing is, in their second year of existence, they made it to the NFC Championship game. But like I was so young at the time, I didn't really connect with, like, you know, Kerry Collins was like their quarterback and he was pretty good, but then he had a lot of off-field issues with, you know, partying and alcohol, drugs, and then the entire Ray Caruth situation, which was something else. But I mean, the only guy from those years that kind of really resonated was Sam Mills. He only played a couple years, but he just got inducted to the Hall of Fame this past summer. But even then, again, I was really young at the time, so I didn't really kind of have like the perspective as some of maybe the older fans would.
What's it kind of been like the last couple years as a fan, and I guess also a little bit as you've become more of an analyst? You're obviously a very film inclined guy. You're very, very sharp with all this kind of stuff. So what's it sort of been like watching them go from, you mentioned the Newton years, which I guess maybe we can hit on those a little bit, but like even like since then, where they've weirdly like filtered Newton back into the mix a little bit. There's been some Sam Darnold, some PJ Walker, obviously, some Teddy Bridgewater. What's kind of that whole ride been like?
Sure. So I'll start with when David Tepper, the current owner,
the Tepper era, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's funny because things ended with the playoff appearance in Jerry Richardson's last game. It was a game again in New Orleans, and that was honestly, in my opinion, one of Cam Newton's best games ever. They lost the game, but it was really close. And the only weapon he really had was Christian McCaffrey at the time.
He was like fighting injuries at the time too, right? He was kind of hobbled and like kind of, you know.
He was still healthy that year. It was a year after he really started getting the injuries. So the Tepper era came in 2018. That first half of that year was fantastic. I mean, Norv Turner was just hired in the offseason. Scott Turner, his son, came with them. And they were just doing so many creative things offensively. And I was someone who actually appreciated Mike Shula, the previous offensive coordinator, just because he was able to develop an offense that suited Cam Newton's strengths, especially a run game that was extremely diverse. And, a lot of the concepts that they installed then are concepts that are very similar to the Greg Roman offense. Because at the time, I remember when I was on Twitter, Matt Bowen would always make a comparison between the Kaepernick 49ers offense and some of the similarities with the Mike Shula Panthers offense. The first half of the year was great. And then they had a Thursday night game in Pittsburgh, of all places. And TJ Watt just kind of obliterated Cam Newton's shoulder. And it was a clean hit and all that stuff. But that really just kind of went sideways for Newton's career ultimately. He played through the injury, but he was not having a really good year at all after that. They lost like three or four games in a row. And then they finally actually, the guy that replaced him was Taylor Heinicke. And unfortunately for Heinicke, he got injured in this first game and then Kyle Allen, he finished out the year, but yeah, they started out like 6-2, 6-3, and they had a crazy like win against the Eagles, who were defending champions. They were down 14-0 in the fourth, and they came back all the way to win. But unfortunately, they finished 7-9. The same regime was still in place with Marty Herney and Ron Rivera. They're taking 2019 draft, and David Tepper didn't really want to make any changes, which, a lot of people felt that he should have. But again, I was just like, just let it ride the course. I mean, I personally thought how Marty Herney returned back to the Panthers was insane. That's another story. But yeah, after that, the 2019 draft comes. I mean, they were very fortunate that Brian Burns fell to them. I felt like Burns was the second best edge rusher in that class behind Nick Bosa. So Carolina got very fortunate. Josh Allen went ahead of him, and I thought Allen was probably the third best edge rusher. But the Raiders, obviously, they felt they had to take Cleveland Farrell at number four overall. So, the season comes, and Newton, after like two games, gets injured. And that's really when I felt like maybe this is the beginning of the end. Kyle Allen takes over for the rest of the year. McCaffrey has like a historic season. 1,000 yards receiving, 1,000 yards rushing, but they only win 5 games. So how much does that really matter? And then David Tepper ultimately does let Ron Rivera go at the end of the season. He actually let him go mid-season. They were 5-7, and then they had an interim head coach for the final 4 games, but they lost all those. So, going into that coaching search, I was fine with like a number of candidates. I really didn't have like a preference. He loved college football, so I actually thought Matt Rhule would have been a fine choice. Like, obviously, in retrospect, it sounds terrible now, especially when I found out that Rhule would be bringing on Joe Brady, the offensive coordinator, or the passing game coordinator at the time of LSU. And yeah, I was just in love with that LSU offense. It was like one of the best offenses that I've personally ever seen. And I thought everything was going to be, work out really well. And it's not like he didn't hire like NFL coaches to his staff. He had a decent amount of NFL, veteran coaches, their offensive line coach. He was with the Chargers, and there were a few other, like the wide receivers coach as well. So I thought, again, things would just, be very, I mean, they would go into a rebuild, they would trade Cam Newton, all this stuff, just kind of wipe the slate clean. Ultimately, Luke Kuechly retires like maybe a week later. Cam Newton, they don't decide to, at the combine, they decide to publicly say he's going to be their quarterback. And then a week and a half later, a report comes out that they want to trade him. And that doesn't happen, obviously, because you lose all the leverage. And they go out and sign Teddy Bridgewater to this big deal. So they don't necessarily rebuild. And that was the biggest mistake that they probably should have made that entire offseason. They could
definitely, in hindsight, it feels like they wanted to try to be competitive off the bat. And it just, it almost reminds you of Arizona as well, like what Keim and Kingsbury have done, like continually just chopping against it instead of just ripping the Band-Aid off.
No, 100%. And again, that season, they were pretty respectable. They were in a lot of games. They played well. I was surprised at how, there were some issues, obviously, with some game administration problems, like getting out of the huddle on time, getting the play, like, which is
operations, normal. Yeah.
Exactly. They finished 5-11, and there's a lot of just confidence because Joe Brady's offense looks exciting. There were a lot of games where the defense played really well, so you thought that that kind of momentum would carry on. But unfortunately, again, they took the quarterback position. They went in the wrong direction. Instead of trading or drafting Mac Jones or Justin Fields, Mac Jones, even I know he's having his struggles this year, but they coached him at the Senior Bowl. I think he would have been a perfectly fine fit for the Joe Brady offense. But they decided to go in a different direction, trade for Sam Darnold. That didn't work out. They started out really well last year, but again, finishing our 5-11 record.
It looked absolutely genius for a very for a fleeting moment. It was like, oh my God, they got Darnold cooking.
And then you realize that the teams they beat were, the Jets with the rookie Zach Wilson, the Saints at the time because half their team had COVID. And then Thursday night against the Houston Texans.
But you also, as a fan, also you have that small inkling of like, well, we don't know if the Jets are bad yet. We don't know yet. So you still have that little fleeting hope that gives you that optimism at the same
time. Yeah, and I think for me, I definitely had it because these weren't close wins. Like, these were dominating performances. A lot of their DVOA and their EPA measurements, they were near the top five because they weren't just like fluking by these performances. But ultimately, I think they lost like six or seven straight games. You know, they had the Cam Newton game when they re-signed him after Darnold got injured. That was in Arizona. That was probably the best moment of the season just because they, you know, the Cardinals at the time were very, I mean, they were like an 8-1 team or something. And then they go into their house and just completely beat them down. But after that, they lost like six or seven straight. You know, the fan base became really apathetic about why they didn't move on from Matt Rhule and, you know, all this other stuff. And then, you know, this offseason happened. You know, they had a decent offseason, all things considered. I think we'll get into some of their personnel. But yeah, I think the writing was on the wall that, you know, a lot of these sports books and other odds makers had Matt Rhule as like the first coach to get fired. And ultimately it did happen. You know, things weren't looking too great to start the year. And, you know, after that 49ers game where, you know, Kyle Shanahan and company came to Charlotte and they just completely beat them down. And that was the fate of Matt Rhule.
It most certainly was. And like you said, Vegas had all of that. And I guess leading into this year, obviously Rhule gets fired. So before we get into the personnel, I guess just looking around what's on this coaching staff, obviously, and feel free whenever you want to, whatever your thoughts are, if there's anybody that you want to jump into for next year's coaching staff that you have your eye on. But you're looking around, Steve Wilks, experienced guy. They've got Ben McAdoo, ton of seasoned guys offensively as well. You know, and then there's some interesting guys, Matt Lombardi, pass game specialist. A couple interesting guys. Assistant head coach is now Jeff Nixon. And then Al Holcomb running the defense. When you're looking around this entire group, who would you think like, or who would you be most curious about that you would want to pull over into the next staff? Or is there any of that at all? If not?
Yeah. So, I mean, there certainly are a few. I would say it depends like how things go with Steve Wilks, not necessarily as the head coach, but as a defensive back coach, because he was a DB coach here, you know, for five seasons when under Ron Rivera, and they really outperformed their talent. I mean, they really did not have much talent in the secondary. Josh Norman was like a fourth or fifth round player from Coastal Carolina. And at the time, Coastal Carolina was an FCS program. And he turned him into an all pro. So, you know, if he wants to stay on as a defensive backs coach, which is what his original title was before he got promoted to interim, you know, that's something I would certainly look at. I think the offensive line coach, James Campman, he's done a really good job. Ike Ekwonu has had a really strong, you know, season so far. And he had a couple struggles early in the year, but he's been very consistent. I mean, there are a little bit of fluff and mirrors associated with his performances because we'll get into it. They're not necessarily a team that drops back 30 or 40 times.
And that was always going to be his question mark as well. Exactly. was in the true drop back. That was what he was going to need development in. Very much so. And to compare it to the Ravens end up taking Tyler Linderbaum, different position, you know, premiums or whatever. But there are things that Linderbaum was going to need to work on and that you might want to hide. And it's just good to see, I feel like, that Icky's strengths are strengths. And they translated quickly, as many thought they would.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And again, he has actually improved, you know, in his past. So I think the biggest, the thing that he needs to most improve on is just his ability to finish. And he needs to do a better job of just latching on, you know, controlling defensive linemen. I think he kind of loses a little too much in that regard. But I will say, you know, as we do preview this game, one area that they really struggle in with respect to pass protection is their running backs aren't very good at picking up blitzes, whether it's Deontay Foreman or Rasheem Blackshear.
Well, Deontay Foreman is – he would probably – get paid a lot more like for what he can do, especially as a gap runner, things like that, if he could do anything in pass pro at all.
Yeah, it's so weird because he actually, you know, he has a body type, he's, you know, has a strong
frame, the mentality, like everything, and he's like he's a vet at this point. He's a, you know, a traveled vet too. That's why it's so strong.
Sure. Yeah, I know. He has the upper body and he has the lower, strong lower half, so you'd think he'd be good in it, but you know, it just hasn't worked out. And I think there are some communication issues as well. Sometimes the protections would slide one way and, you know, a few of the guys wouldn't necessarily pick it up. But yeah, that's one area that they have to kind of improve on. But James Campman, to your original question, would be a guy that I would consider bringing back their offensive line coach.
So I guess getting into this game a little bit, and we've touched on some of the players up to this point, Ravens fans definitely know DJ Moore. They know him very well, and they were maybe a little bit thirsty for him at the trade deadline, us included.
They've been thirsty for him for 5-6 years now?
Yeah, listen, for sure. He's local to the area to some extent, so obviously there's that. They know Brian Burns. They know J.C. Horn. They probably know Ike Ekwonu. Who's the player that they maybe don't know about that they have a chance of learning about in this game by potentially having a big performance?
Baker Mayfield? I'm joking. I think there's a few guys on our defensive line. Marquise Haynes, he had a couple sacks last week. He's more of like a rotational edge rusher, but they're giving him a lot more snaps on base downs as well. It remains to be seen if he can hold up for an entire game playing that. But he's a guy that I think you should pay attention to. Derek Brown, he has had a tremendous season. I liked him coming out of the draft at Auburn.
That was my number one player in the
class. He was all over him.
Wow. Okay. See, I was a little down on him just because of the value of an interior defensive lineman. I didn't think he had the same talent as like a Fletcher Cox or Aaron Donald or some of the other guys, like
Quinnen Williams. His skill set in comparison with Quinnen Williams' skill set, exactly. Things like that.
But no, he's proved me wrong. And I think a lot of what he did this offseason, he trimmed, he shed a lot of weight. But he has become, such a tremendous force in both the run and the pass. He is kind of their anchor on the defensive line. So, he's definitely a guy. I would also say Iodinus, but I think he's going to be out this week if he's injured. Marquise Haynes, one of their edge rushers, number 98, and Derek Brown, number 95 on the defensive line.
And I guess we'll go with the defensive side of the ball first here and looking around. And I mean, the guys that end plays, and one guy I'm surprised you didn't mention because I feel like you love him. I can't remember. But it's like, obviously you got Shaq Thompson, well-known. He's ending plays in a general 30,000-foot phrase, ending plays. Who's making plays, ending plays, executing? It's Frankie Louvu, who is probably one of the most outside of Carolina under-heralded, exciting players that's in a weird spot. Him and, EJ Speed in Indianapolis right now, a couple guys that are really exciting and coming into their own in some ways. And obviously Brian Burns, YGM, you mentioned Ioannidis, who's not going to be in this one. So where are they finding success? It feels like in the run game, it's, the up the spine, they have Chin, they've got a nice spine in terms of Brown, their linebacker play, their safety play kind of through there. J.C. Horn, a physical guy, all of those things. So against the run and in terms of, gap versus zone, where are teams able to make their hay right now? DVOA wise, Panthers are not rated well against the run. EPA wise, not rated well against the run. All of those kinds of things. So that unit, is in comparison with the Panthers' offense, it feels like has had much more consistency and hasn't had a ton of changes or anything like that. So where has this Panthers defense found good matchups, found good personnel, found good tendencies and all of those, and where do they need to really pick it up here to make games competitive?
Yeah, they certainly struggle against the run. There's no doubt about it. And I think a lot of their issues stem from just their personnel. They don't have the bodies, especially on the edge, to hold up in that regard. Go watch week one, Cleveland, Bill Callahan influence, a lot of wide zone and a lot of gap concepts mixed into it too. And certainly helps when you have a running back caliber of Nick Chubb. If you can, close off those edges and just look to run outside the tackle, I think Baltimore is going to have a lot of success, whether it's with Lamar or one of your running backs. In addition to that, I just think the play of Brown and Shaq Thompson, I mean, it's, they're solid NFL players, especially Thompson. Brown's a little better. But those guys can't do it alone. It starts up front. And
they're the ones that are going to get game planned. And they're going to get double teamed. They're going to get sealed off. They're going to get avoided, all of those things.
Yeah, for sure. So, coming into the year, Phil Snow's defense comes from the Baylor, college system, the tight fronts, a lot of light boxes. That's sort of, how they built their defense. I disagree with that philosophy. I think you're seeing now in the NFL, just look at the team like the Eagles, who went out and signed two defensive tackles today because they missed Jordan Davis. Stopping the run, in my opinion, is I know a lot of people like to make fun of it, but you need, to stop the run.
It's funny. There's this whole genesis on NFL Live today that's making its rounds about Orlovsky and Spears and Ryan
ESPN.
Clark.
Yeah, they've had a couple of those in the last couple of weeks, and that was a really good one.
And it's funny. And then you get guys like Coach Vass, who Chris Vasseur, who's, you know, like, maybe you just do what teams did 30 years ago and 20 years ago and 10 years ago in that sense. So I think that goes hand in hand with what you're saying, Billy. And I don't know. So where do you see this game panning out? I guess to talk about the passing aspect of things as well. Not that they've, I don't know. I feel like they run a balanced amount of coverages in ways. You know, J.C. Horn's an excellent caliber player and able to. I don't know. It just doesn't feel like there's a.
I'll ask you this: what does this game look like if Mark Andrews plays? What does this game look like if Mark Andrews does not play?
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, I mean, that's. I don't think it makes too much of a difference because I thought that. You know, the game in Cincinnati would go a little better, and Ja'Marr Chase didn't play. But you know, Cincinnati scored 35 points. Joe Mixon had, you know, four or five touchdowns. He went off, and Joe Burrow didn't really have to throw the ball all over the yard like sometimes you see him throw for like crazy numbers. So, you know, for a team like Baltimore that likes to run the ball, it's going to be a very difficult matchup for Carolina. They struggle against the run. Now they had a kind of a mini bye. They played on Thursday night last week, so. Maybe there's some adjustments in their fronts that they can, you know, do some late, you know, rotations to kind of, you know, cover up some gaps and win at the line of scrimmage. But, you know, Baltimore's coming off a bye and they're getting healthier. So this is going to be a very tough matchup. You know, coverage wise, I think they're pretty good, even though they did lose a few of their cornerbacks. Dante Jackson, he's out. He got an Achilles injury recently. Their safeties are kind of underrated. Xavier Woods has been in the league for a while. I think he's played really well.
And then another for him, like Trey Boston. There's a couple of these guys like Trey Boston back in the day. These weird safeties that are just like, I mean, this is a compliment, like deep, like average, decent safeties, and just no team wants them for some reason.
They just hang around. Yeah. Guys. Trey Boston definitely was that guy that like, he would, you know,
another Panther.
Yeah. He was just hanging on for the,
why does nobody want Xavier Woods? He's a fine player.
I like him. I mean, he's been really good. Boston. So.
I remember that. Yeah. That was.
And then what, you guys have CJ Henderson taking snaps there, the project. What have you seen out of CJ Henderson? Obviously first round player gets the people going. And where has he been struggling as he's?
So he's been inconsistent a little bit. I think the athleticism with Henderson is off the charts. You saw that interception that he had in overtime against the Falcons where, you know, essentially the safety just drove inside when he should have been playing a cover three technique. And, you know, Henderson just followed the post with him and recovered well enough that, you know, the ball was a little inaccurate anyway by Mariota. But, I mean, it was like 60 yards down the field. So he has like these moments where you – think of him as like an elite corner, the prospect that you draft, that the Jaguars draft in the top 10. But for the most part, his consistency is really waning. And it's nothing to do with the mental side. I know some people have, you know, questioned his desire to play football. It's a lot of just, you know, he gets really flat footed when he's in off coverage. And I think a lot of it is just from the simple fact that I don't think he's reading the receivers as well as he probably should. You know, the scheme is pretty simple, especially since Wilkes and Holcomb took over. They kind of simplified it. They're not necessarily doing too many crazy, like
a lot of cover three, a lot of middle of the field close stuff, right? From what I've seen,
there's nothing like there's no pattern match, anything crazy like that into their defense. They do a good job of passing off routes. But you know, Henderson, I mean, he really struggles like in that aspect. I think I was watching that, you know, Bucks game on Thursday night a couple weeks ago, and Lamar was struggling to start off the game, but then, you know, he just started hitting those hitches to DeMarcus Robinson, right, you know, 8-9 yards. And I think that's an area that you can really get Henderson because, you know, his technique, especially off coverage, isn't great. So definitely an area to watch.
And then it makes him start to have to come up, and then it's in his head, and then that's where you start to attack.
I will say Jeremy Chinn has a chance to play this week, so that could factor in pretty well if Mark Andrews does play, because Chinn, in my opinion, he's one of the better young safeties in the league, and he's been out for, you know, a month and a half or so. So just keep an eye on
him. He's been limited in practice this week, I believe, correct?
Yeah. Yes. I don't know if they're going to rush him this week, but, you know, it has been 10 days, so I would just look for him on the injury report or when inactives come out.
Definitely. I guess switching over to the other side of the ball, I think, Jake, you had a couple things you wanted to hit on.
I'm just kind of curious, like, the quarterback position, I mean, what are we feeling right now? Is it just completely looking forward to like Bryce Young and CJ Stroud, or like what are we trying to get anything out of this group right now? I mean, PJ Walker was kind of frisky there for a minute.
Yeah, and unfortunately he had the injury. Here's what I'll say about the offense. Before Wilkes took over, they just for some reason wanted to become a very heavily dependent drop back passing team, and I don't think that works with A, this offensive personnel, and B, Baker Mayfield. So since then, they've just been running the heck out of the ball. I mean, they had like 45, called runs last week. They only dropped back like 16 or 17 times. Now, yes, I understand the weather wasn't great, but that's sort of been what they've been doing throughout the Wilkes tenure. So I would just really be prepared to stop the run. Baker Mayfield is not going to beat anyone in 2022 through the air. But I will say that if they have some favorable down distances, like if they do well on first and second downs, then I think they're going to try to create some defined reads for him. But you know, Ben McAdoo, this is why I was so confused about the hire, is that Matt Rhule was a guy who traditionally wants to run the ball. I mean, he's said it in the past, and for some reason he just let McAdoo have free reign. And I mean, they were dropping back 30 to 40 times with a quarterback that shouldn't be playing in that type of system. So, you know, since then they've just been
running. Really, that was an overarching kind of theme of the Rhule era. It was like the proverb right now is that if you adapt to your players as opposed to forcing them to your scheme, then you succeed. And I feel like Rhule wanted to do that and just never actually did.
Oh, for sure. I mean, there were so many examples of that. But yeah, I think going into this game, you have to expect Carolina to just really establish a run. And if Baltimore can do a good job of limiting them on early downs, then I think that's when Mayfield will struggle. If it becomes a dropback game, there's no chance for Baker Mayfield to survive.
Definitely. In that run game, the Panthers have been, I would say, average, mediocre zone stuff from what I've seen. And then shockingly, I guess not even shockingly, just maybe quietly really freaking good in gap man stuff. And I wanted to ask you what you've seen along the front, tight end wise, you know, from Foreman in that run game that's allowed them to get going. And like you said, what is the recipe going to be? Even if it's PJ Walker, Mayfield, you know, even if Sam Darnold comes in, what are teams going to want to do? Shut down basically the Panthers' power run game and force them to drop back. And Panthers have been able to still keep, you know, chopping wood against it into the wind, so to speak. So what have you seen in there, and what could people that watch this game expect to see in that sense?
Yeah, I mean, the run game has been a pleasant surprise. They do a lot of gap and power schemes, a lot of counters, some wham and trap influence as well. They do quite a bit, more than I thought. And one element that they are adding, they're, you know, dressing it up as well. There's a lot of pre-snap motion now into their offense. So you can kind of dictate, you know, and create open gaps and lanes if you have to. But I think that, you know, the offensive line, they certainly, in my opinion, this offensive line has potential to be very good pass blocking, but because they don't really have a true pass, like a quarterback, they just have to rely on the run game at this point. And again, like I said earlier, I think the protection issues stem from the quarterback and offensive line not being on the same page. So that's where you get a lot of confusion at the line, and there's some just quick pressure that happened. It's not from, you know, any of the offensive linemen necessarily getting beat quickly off the snap. I mean, there's sometimes that happens, like where Grady Jarrett was one of the best in the league beating one of their interior guys. But for the most part, you know, they really struggled with some of the blitzes that Dean Pease brought or Raheem Morris. So, you know, and I don't know how similar the defenses are. I know Mike McDonald, I don't know if he was on staff when Dean Pease was there, but there's, if you blitz through the A-gap with Roquan and some of the other linebackers, I think you're going to have a really good chance of affecting Carolina's offense.
They shipped Robbie Anderson off basically for a bag of balls, and I mean, they might have been justified in doing so based upon what we've seen. But
plus, the guys that they wanted to like give time, Laviska Shenault, Terrace Marshall, you want to get those guys reps anyway.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I'm leading into there. How have those guys looked thus far? Terrace Marshall, I think we both liked a lot coming out of LSU there. Laviska Shenault, really fun player. I always thought it's kind of unfortunate the injury situations that have kind of held him back. But how has this core looked? I know Shenault had a big play last week. How has it been kind of behind DJ Moore there?
Yeah, for sure. So this is what I talk about, NFL competency. When you have like NFL guys on your staff and who are running the operation, you see guys like Terrace Marshall, who just was a product of, he probably lost all of his confidence under the Matt Rhule regime just because there were so many moving parts. The offensive coordinator that he was with at LSU, Joe Brady, gets fired midseason, and then you just switch everything up this offseason, and there were even reports that he was on the roster bubble and preseason, which I found absurd. But I, like you guys, liked Marshall coming out of LSU. But yeah, no, it's just, you know, the amount of confidence he's playing with now is very, you know, awesome to watch. I mean, he's running precise routes, he's catching the ball really well, he's doing a really good job with his body control, especially in contested situations. And with Chenault, it's, you know, Chenault is a limited player. He's not going to necessarily run, you know, down the field and beat you as a burner, but his two biggest plays of the year have been very similar, just where he's running a flat route. He catches a ball, the receivers do a pretty good job blocking, and he's a very powerful runner in the open field, and that's how he can just really create explosive plays. So, you know, for me, there's going to be a lot of attention to DJ Moore, as there should be. But I think the emergence of Terrace Marshall has been one of the brighter developments of the year.
Well said, my friend. Well said. So Ravens currently 13-point favorites in this one. Panthers did have a little bit of a mini bye. The Ravens had a full bye here. How do you see this game ultimately playing out? You don't have to give a score prediction if you don't want. If you feel inclined, you absolutely can. Do you think they cover anything of the sort? What do you think this game plays out like? Can the Panthers sustain some drives or generate explosive plays? And if they do cover or win, what does that look like and why?
Yeah, so I think I read something on Twitter today about how when John Harbaugh is like a double-digit favorite, the Ravens have an excellent record. But yeah, this is going to be an uphill battle for Carolina, no doubt about it. Weather is supposed to be kind of cold too. So, I mean, I certainly would lean towards, you know, I never take huge double-digit favorites, but I would probably lean towards taking the points with Baltimore. I just think this is going to be very tough for their defense, or excuse me, their offense. And yeah, you know, when you get in a drop back game with Baker Mayfield, things don't go well. I mean, you guys have seen some of his struggles firsthand. I mean, that game last year was kind of weird though. Like, it was a Sunday night game. Baker turned it over like 5 times. Lamar turned it over like 3 or 4 times. But the Browns were more talented, and Carolina doesn't have Jadeveon Clowney and Myles Garrett on the edge. As good as Brian Burns is, you know, that's a problem. And so, you know, Baltimore's offense, Greg Roman, I think he's going to, you know, design a really good game plan, especially running the ball and attacking these edges. That's where they have issues. Last year, Scott Turner and the Washington Commanders came into Charlotte around this time of the year, and they just ran the ball all over them with Gibson. That essentially was like the turning point for this run defense. You know, a lot of other teams have used that same formula. We saw the Browns do it. They did a really good job against Saquon Barkley the following week. But for the most part, in the other games, the 49ers game, even the Cardinals, Eno Benjamin, who was just recently cut, he had like 12 carries for 92 yards. So, this is a game where Baltimore's run game is going to be the difference, in my opinion. And I mean, their linebackers, Shaq Thompson and Littleton, they aren't necessarily the best in coverage. So you run the ball, do really well, get that play action, you know, open up the middle of the field for Andrews or the tight ends. I know Josh Oliver's had a pretty solid year too. I think that's going to be a difference in the game. I just think like a lot of the matchups that we're talking about, it just leans Baltimore's direction. You know, special teams has been a very huge improvement this year, but when you have Justin Tucker on the other sideline, I don't think you have an advantage in that area either. So I think, you know, Carolina might have some bounces go their way here and there, but ultimately it's going to be like a 30-13 games, 31-13, 31-14. I don't think it's going to be necessarily like a crazy blowout like we saw in Cincinnati, but I think Baltimore is very efficient. They're just going to go in there, do their job, and move on to the next week.
My kind of final question here, just what makes Billy Mayfield Marshall happy in 2023? In order for you to be happy by, let's say, this time next year, what is the most basic or even detailed, if you want, thing that you want to see from the Carolina Panthers?
And happiness, a very abject concept too. I mean, it's just like, how do you even define that? So
Yeah, honestly, I don't even like. They just have to have some NFL competency. I don't even want to like give you like my head coach preferences or anything like that, because you know everyone you know wanted Nathaniel Hackett, and he's turned out to be a disaster. So it's like I don't even know how to judge these guys from the outside. But yeah, honestly, as long as they're competitive next year, whether it's with the rookie QB or whoever they end up getting, I think that's going to be the most telling part. As long as you have a rookie QB and you're sort of competitive, I don't really care what the record is. You're seeing growth from him. 2011 was one of my best years supporting the team. You know, Cam Newton threw like for 400 yards, like in back-to-back games to open up the year, and he went toe-to-toe with Aaron Rodgers. And Rodgers
that was sick. That was a sick time.
Week two. So they were only a 6-10 team, but like they were just putting up crazy pass numbers, and I had so much fun watching. And so like for me, as long as I'm pretty realistic, I'm not expecting a new coach and a rookie quarterback potentially to come in here and, you know, take the world by fire. Like, you know, the Dak Prescott situation doesn't necessarily happen. So as long as they pick a quarterback, whoever it is in the draft, just some sort of competitiveness and competency, I think that would probably make me happy next year.
Very nice. I guess, Spen, what do you got?
That does it for me. That's about it, my friend. If you wanted to plug your stuff and tell the good people where to follow you and all that good stuff, brother.
Yeah, well, I'm still on Twitter, BillyM_91. We also host a podcast, Carolina Panthers podcast, called The Roar. It's on Blue Wire. So if you guys want to hear from the opposing viewpoint, we do a podcast once or twice a week. So that's where you find me. Until then, might have to make a TikTok and whatever. To stay afloat on social media until something
message boards are coming back in a big way. I think that's going to be the future.
Hey, that's how I essentially kept up with the team.
It's just like the pass game and the run game. Like, you know how that's cyclical? It's going back towards the run now.
Yes.
I love it. Sometimes you got to go back to go forward.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, you guys would know. I mean, you know, there's some of those early 2000 Ravens teams, Jamal Lewis just pounding the ball like 40 times a game. I know how it is.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. All right, well, thanks for joining us, brother. I guess we can go ahead and get you out of here.
I appreciate you guys.
See you.
Thanks, Billy.
All right, so I was about to tee you up to go ahead and give your prediction. So what are you thinking in this one?
I am thinking that the Ravens roll tide, man. I think it's time. They're off the bye week, as Billy even knows, that the Ravens are outstanding when they are a huge favorite. They're outstanding coming off of the bye. I think, like I said last episode, I'm still – really high on this Baltimore Ravens team. I think things are clicking. Really the only question mark, can this Ravens team generate explosive plays in the pass game? That's really just the only question about this entire team. Can you somewhat consistently do that? And in the realm of what we mentioned, when we were talking with Billy, is that not a lot of teams are doing that. And ESPN went and showed the stat, you know, it's the lowest yards per completion in NFL history, really going back to the 1930s this year, running the ball, yards per carry and success rate are at all-time highs right now. So if they can iron that out, if that's what they worked on, you want to see operations, like we mentioned, you know, once the huddle's broken, get to the line. Do not walk, run, get up there, get ready, get your motion in. And they do a grand symphony orchestra too many times, and that has its positives and negatives. But want to see operations be tight. Will that happen? That's something we've been complaining about for years, so probably not. But want to see it a little tighter than it was. And I don't know. I'm fired up. I think it's going to be a fun game to watch. I think this is going to be like you said, Jake, this is a Thanksgiving. This is the Thanksgiving game for Ravens fans, basically. You know, Thanksgiving there on Thursday. So get fired up. Hit your local brewery. Hit your local flavor of choice. Your dirty, dirty pirate water, even if you want, and get after it, man. I think this is going to be a fun game and a big Ravens win. And then we're going to be talking about a pretty hefty win streak moving into next week, is my prediction.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to go Ravens big win as well. I'm going to go 28-15. Big day for Eddie Pinheiro. 5 field goals. Ravens 4 touchdowns.
Love that prediction. I didn't give a score prediction. I'm going to go Ravens 41, Panthers 8.
You're all over them covering this line too, by the way, which I like.
I'm on it like flies on shit. I think I'm going to anoint myself. I'm not even going to knock. Actually, I'm going to knock on wood. I was going to be super arrogant. I think I'm the king of double digit spreads. I am on fire with double digit spreads.
People slide in those DMs, get those double-digit spread picks.
There you go. Plus, Ravens first half, 6.5, that's a tasty bite. That is an absolutely tasty bite. this Panthers team is tough. They like to hit. They're physical. I don't want to drown on too long here. We went pretty long there, but the way this game is as competitive is if the Panthers continue to be violent. They are a violent, tough team still. They are not a competent team. They are not a successful team, but they're a violent, physical team. I have an inkling that being in this stadium against this kind of Ravens team, the players that they have, the talent that they have, and the physical brand that the Ravens are willing to or want to go to quickly and often on both sides of the football, I think it breaks the spirit of this Panthers team early. And I think Ravens are going to be all over them, man. I think it's going to be a big, big, big win.
Love it. Well, that is what you guys get. We'll certainly be breaking down this game more so on the recap pod on Sunday night. And hopefully it is going to be that big one. And like I said, make it a fun weekend. Make it the short week for everyone who's not having to work on Thursday and Friday. I'm sure we have listeners that do. So our thoughts are with you because that sucks. And maybe some good content from us will help you get through that. But for those that aren't, go ahead and do it up, live it up, just like we're going to. It's going to be a fun weekend, fun short week. And hopefully a Ravens win is going to be a big part of that as we're predicting here. So. In the meantime, go ahead and follow us on social media. You can follow the show on Twitter for the time being at Podcast Beatdown. You can follow me for the time being at Jake Luke. That's Louque. And you can follow Spencer for the time being at Ravens 4 Dummies. That's the number 4 in the middle there. Hopefully Twitter is still around. Next time we're recording this thing, I don't really know what to do if it's not. But in the meantime, we'll talk to you guys later.
See ya.
Arrivederci.
Where is the wise man? Where is the scholar? Where is the philosopher of this age?
Get down!
Baltimore!
What are they giving?
Everything out of me. They don't get a Super Bowl out of me. Need that. Yeah. Need that.